This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. Of Bandits and Bad Magic by Leslie Heron. Chapter 12, Gersinia. There was an old adage that once said, "When life gives you lemons, make lemonade." But at this point, Eric would have welcomed lemons. His current situation was more akin to being pelted in the face with rotten fruit. He brushed a small beetle off his shoulder and returned his attention to the bandit camp, which they had discovered to be the source of the smoke rising in the air. It hadn't taken them long to track down the campfire. Evan was the best tracker money could buy. And despite the constant squabbling between the tiny merc and the arcanist, they had made good time. But now they were peering out from between the gaps in a large frond bush, gazing down into the handsome camp below. There were simple tents erected around a blazing bonfire, most nothing more than a stretch of fabric held up by two poles, with one grand display of finery at the far end of the camp. Several sturdy horses were tethered near a collection of wooden carts, and while they were too far away to make out much detail of the camp's inhabitants, there were a number of them milling about with evening chores. Eric turned, running his hand through his hair.
"Are you sure this is Rassizi's camp? It looks a little too clean for a group of grunts living off the land."
Atlas was staring at the camp, holding his hands in front of his one eye like he was grasping an invisible spyglass.
While I do see a few humans mixed in, this is definitely a twisted camp. They've got all manner of beasties down there."
Eric felt that twinge of trepidation.
"But you haven't spotted Rassizi, or that giant wolf dog thing of hers, right? So maybe it's best we get out of here before she gets back."
He wasn't sure how much faith he put in a magical spyglass, but it had gotten them this far. Atlas shook his head, dropping the spell and turning to face them.
"Normally, I'd agree with you, but we have a more pressing issue."
He turned an accusing gaze on Barry.
"Somebody ate the last of our food, and without any idea how long we're going to be out here, we'll need to restock or risk starvation."
He looked back down at the camp, his eyes scanning across the figures and their belongings.
"See there? They've got provisions under those tarps on some of the wagons. I'm sure of it."
Eric was inclined to agree. They had caught the scent of cooking meat half a mile before reaching their hiding place. There was definitely food down there, and his stomach was vocalizing its agreement. Evan snorted as he pushed his hands on his hips.
"You want to risk getting us all captured again for a couple apples?"
Atlas rolled his eye.
"Look, if an apple is too big for you to carry, I'm sure we could find something more your size."
He leaned in, a malicious grin curling his lips.
"Perhaps a grape?"
"Quit deflecting!"
Evan narrowed his gaze and threw out an accusatory finger.
"It's too dangerous, and you know it. We can just forage for food."
"Forage for food? This ain't a market stall. We're in the middle of nowhere. And none of us are exactly the outdoorsy type."
"Speak for yourself. Who's the one that found us fresh water? Hmm? Me."
"You found a tiny stream. So small, in fact, it can't actually be classified as a stream. That doesn't make you a survivalist."
Eric turned away from the two as their bickering started to become physical. He dragged his hand down across his face, pausing to scratch at the scruff on his cheek. Exhaustion was gnawing at his every bone and joint, and he was sure that the lack of food and water had wreaked havoc with his mind. He'd already felt the effects of dehydration once, and was not keen to experience it again. He looked over his shoulder, squinting down at his shadow with unease. "Rotten lemonade it is."
"Atlas is right."
The Arcanist froze, halfway through pummeling the tiny dwarf that was currently gnawing at his shin.
"Wait, you're siding with me? Really?"
Evan let go and looked up.
"Yeah, really?"
Eric set his jaw.
Listen, he's made some valid points. It's a risk, but one we're going to have to take. We're running low on supplies, and we'll starve before we make it through this forest. That is, if we're not eaten by another giant plant or something first.
Viren tapped him gently on the arm, but Eric continued.
If Razizi isn't back yet, we could easily have the upper hand here. We make the horses a priority. They'll help us travel faster, increasing the chance of not only escaping, but finding a way out of this forest before we starve.
He pointed towards the tarps down in the camp.
The next important thing is food and water. If we can manage to get any on our way out, great, but not if it means risking our lives.
Viren tapped him again, this time with more urgency. Evan crossed his arms.
And what about the hordes of angry monsters?
We have a bear, a zombie, and an arcanist on our side. You three can cause chaos while the rest of us get the horses and gear. When we're ready, we use the logs from the bonfire to set the camp ablaze. With any luck, they'll be too busy trying to put it out to chase us.
Atlas nodded.
What a bad plan. I like it.
The prince's incessant tapping had become hard to ignore, and Eric whipped around, his mouth forming a snarl as he blurted out,
What?
Viren pointed at the darkening shadow that had been slowly creeping towards them from behind. Eric took a step back as they were greeted by the massive barrel chest of a behemoth stone creature, 8 feet in height. It leered down at them with 2 beetle-black eyes set deep into a jagged slab of cracked stone carved into the shape of a ram skull. Large clusters of purple crystal jutted up from its stony flesh like bony protrusions, and every inch of his body was carved with intricate designs and images like the wall of an ancient temple. Atlas's jaw dropped.
A stone Goliath!
The creature let out a deep, rumbling chuckle as it lifted 2 giant hands the size of couch cushions and lowered them down, one on each of the tiny half-elves standing before it.
Chaos, you say?
He let the full weight of his palms rest on the creatures, forcing them to the ground.
You was planning on attacking us and stealing our food. Not very neighborly.
Eric tried to talk around the mouthful of dirt, but it felt like he had a planet resting on his chest. Life had just taken away his rotten fruit and handed him a pile of rocks instead. Atlas let out a guffawing laugh, stepping to the side so as to let his friend move forward.
Barry, show them how neighborly we can be.
He threw his hand out, gesturing towards the bear, who stomped down his front paw, fur bristling before he bellowed out a battle roar.
You're in for it now.
Barry began to charge, his paws tearing into the soil as he barreled his way at the behemoth, when he saw something small and colorful fly out of a bush and strike him square in the nose. His roar died in his throat as his face went numb and he stumbled, smacking into the dirt and sliding. He blinked several times, forcing his eyes to focus on the feathered fletching of a blow dart. He let out a half-hearted attempt at a roar as he pushed himself to his feet, but he was assailed by another dart. Before Barry could turn around, something was slung over his nose and cinched tight. He made to reach up and pawed off his face, but he was bound. Looking around wildly now, he could see no less than 5 smallish creatures tethering him with lengths of rope. Each one had pointed spears aimed in his direction and were shouting at him in a gibberish tongue. Atlas dropped his hands in disbelief as several short, hairy pygmies emerged from the brush, tossing ropes and tethers over the bear who was absently pawing at his numb face. The arcanist shook his head and sighed, drawing power up from the earth into his fingertips.
All right, well, now you're in for it.
He turned to face the giant behemoth and lifted his hands, flexing his knuckles to loosen the tendons.
I haven't done this spell in ages.
As he opened his mouth to speak the words, something hard clamped around his face. Then he watched in horror as an obsidian palm shot forward, encompassing his hands. His captor hauled him back, pinning him against their own stony body. Atlas looked up, wide-eyed, into the face of another stone giant. But unlike her male counterpart, he was delightfully surprised to see a giant statuesque woman holding him tight against her bosom. He swooned in her grip. Evan darted for the underbrush, hoping to escape unnoticed and rescue the others once they were all inevitably tied up and left unguarded. He sighed as he shook his head. These bad guys were getting way too predictable. Either that, or his friends were spending far too much time being captured. He skidded to a halt when a short, hairy figure stepped out of the brush right in his path, leveling a wood spear in his direction. Evan's hand shot down to the handles of his knives, but he was caught off guard when he realized he'd seen this type of creature before.
"Wait, you're..."
His words faded away as several other small bodies jumped him from behind and pinned him to the ground before binding his hands. Eric struggled to catch his breath around a groan as the meaty boulder pressed him farther into the ground. Their daring plan had lasted all of a minute before it came crashing down in fantastic failure. He could see his brother's chastising expression in his mind with his "I'll do it myself" attitude. He looked over at the prince, who was in a similar state of discomfort, but was staring at him expectantly. He shook his head slightly. He knew what Varen was asking, but no, he didn't have a plan. With little struggle, their captors had bound and gagged them all before marching them as a group towards their camp. Even Bob, who had been waiting for orders, was given a tether and ushered along by a spear-toting pygmy, although Eric was pretty sure the undead was just following them of his own free will, as usual. Barry was being herded along by the rest of the small hairy humanoids, jabbing at his hindquarters with their weapons. One of them had tied Evan to the bear's back, next to the rider, who had his menacing blowgun out and readied, just in case. Even Atlas couldn't escape from his captor. Not that he really wanted to, as the stone giantess hefted him into her strong arms. He kept stealing glances up at her as she carried him against her hips. As they entered the camp, dazzling firelight struck Eric's eyes in the dim evening. They were marched past the tents and carts, drawing a crowd of onlookers who had peeked out at them to see the spectacle. Eric noticed one woman who looked mostly human and had dark skin dappled with vitiligo and a mane of frizzy black hair. Her golden eyes went wide as she gazed up at him in particular. He felt a pit drop somewhere in the depths of his stomach. Even if Rassizi wasn't here, these people recognized him. It was just a matter of time before they turned him over to this regent lord, or bandit queen, or whoever else would offer coin in exchange. He shifted to look away from her, turning his head in the opposite direction. More and more people were coming out of their tents as the rock giant made its slow march towards the bonfire. Eric's analytic curiosity overtook his fears as he looked around the small crowd. There were men, tall and thin, covered in brilliant feathers, with sinister faces like birds. He spotted a woman whose body merged into a snake below the waist, and a squat humanoid that looked like a bipedal toad. They passed a large cage that contained a couple of cat-like creatures that paced back and forth, except they were covered in oily scales and had a mane of sharp quills. There was a frail old woman with thick, leathery skin stretched taut over her bones that was cradling a large puffball of a creature in her arms that cooed at their passing. Several more pygmies stood atop one another to peer over the heads of the gathering crowd to ogle them. But it was the pale, furred wolf creature, standing tall on digitigrade feet and crossing two of its four arms as they passed, that solidified Eric's growing hypothesis. He looked over at Evan, mumbling through his gag to get his attention. The tiny merc nodded, signaling that he was thinking the same thing. They had seen many of these creatures before, but on different worlds. Eric shifted to get a better glance at the nearest group of onlookers. This wasn't a bandit camp. It was a collection of racial oddities. Outcasts, maybe? His train of thought derailed as he noticed a dark-skinned man, also dappled with vitiligo, that had what appeared to be large brass gears woven into his braids. The birdwoman next to the dappled man was wearing a necklace cobbled out of ancient electrical wire with what looked like computer flash drives dangling from it. He let out a muffled laugh as he saw a small goblin staring up at them through a tribal mask fashioned out of an old motherboard with stainless steel bolts embellishing its surface like metal fangs. This place has technology? His moment of excitement was short-lived as Eric was shoved unceremoniously into the dirt near the campfire. This wasn't good, he thought, as he turned to see the others were being pushed into the dirt next to him. He hissed at the arcanist around his gag, asking wordlessly if there was any way out of their predicament. Atlas, only having one eye, attempted to give him a sly wink, but it came off as an awkward and uncomfortable slow blink. He then turned at the waist to gaze up at the lovely creature standing over him. She must have been carved by the goddess herself. She was tall and cut from the blackest obsidian, with soft curves that balanced out her sharp features. The crystals that grew all over her body had been filed down until they resembled jewelry, and the firelight made them glow like tiny, hot embers. She stared down at him with emotionless white eyes and tutted at his love-struck expression with distaste. Atlas threw his bound hands up in the air, pleading silently with her to free him. Her pouting lips snarled as she shoved him back into the dirt with more force than was necessary. Eric rolled his eyes as the magician let out several muffled words and swooned again. He returned his attention back to the rock giant, who was stepping past them to move towards the elaborate tent at the center of the camp. The blazing bonfire flickered off his sharp amethyst crystals that ran down his back like jagged spines. He leaned his head into the grand tent. There was muffled sounds of speech, and a moment later, the giant stepped aside to make room for what Eric could only assume would be their leader. As the man pushed aside the flap and stepped forward, it was obvious that he was most definitely the one in charge. He was a dwarf, but stood taller than any member of his race should be. Despite having the stout and stocky proportions of a dwarven brawler, he was tall enough to be a short man. He had olive skin and a mane of salt-and-pepper hair that wreathed his square face. His bushy mutton chops came down his cheeks and merged with the massive mustache beneath his crooked nose, forming an imperial beard with an impressively long braid coming off his chin. This man exuded an aura of calm power and the kind of confidence that demanded absolute respect.
"What have we here?"
His thick accent and resonant voice was like listening to somber church bells. For the first time, Atlas tore his attention away from the onyx beauty. The rock giant gestured at the group as the pygmies pushed the bear closer to the fire.
"We caught them near the edge of the camp, sir. They said they was planning on killing us, burning the camp, and stealing our horses, sir."
The dwarf took a step closer, examining them all with wild blue eyes. After a moment of careful consideration, he waved a hand in the air and turned his back on them.
"The Argolis will feast well tonight. Toss them into their cages."
Atlas cried out against his filthy gag, rolling over until he could push himself to his knees. He began speaking at length, despite the fact that he wasn't the least bit understandable. The dwarf swiveled on his heels, slowly returning to face them. He moved closer to the mage and leaned in, putting his meaty hand against his ear.
I didn't quite catch that.
Atlas made an audible sigh before restarting his speech, the rag still in his mouth. The dwarf closed his eyes, pushing his fingers against his temples before gesturing at the group of pygmies. Atlas exhaled as he felt the gag loosen from his mouth.
I said...
He rubbed at the spot where the fabric had dug into his cheeks.
We mistook your camp as belonging to a group of bandits that have been hunting us. We would never steal from fellow circus folk, had we known.
The troopmaster dropped his hands to his sides as he leaned back in, scrutinizing each one of the prisoners that had been placed before the bonfire.
You don't look like traveling performers.
Atlas let out a nervous chuckle.
Like I said, those bandits stole all of our gear. Why else would I have a dancing bear?
Barry gave him a sidelong glance before rolling into a seated position and waving his paws in a half-hearted dance. Atlas nodded emphatically.
See? And this here's the world's smallest dwarf.
He threw his hands out to gesture at Evan, who offered the mage an upside-down scowl from where he was still tethered to Barry's back. The troopmaster squinted at the tiny creature for a moment before clearing his throat.
He's no dwarf. I no dwarf. I don't know what he is.
Right, but the village rubes don't know that.
He seemed to consider this for a moment and nodded.
True enough. People know only what they have seen, and most have seen only their backyard. What about the others?
Atlas gestured at Bob, who was still mostly wrapped in his makeshift cowl.
Meet our horribly disfigured fire juggler. He's not very good yet, but he's learning.
He turned towards Eric and Varen.
And, these two are...
The dwarf held up a hand.
Let me guess. Bearded lady and sword swallower, no?
He pointed at each of the brothers in turn before crossing his arms over his barrel chest and stared down at the rambling idiot.
What kind of performing troupe includes the lost king and the disgraced prince?
Alice swallowed as he felt the color rush from his skin.
No, they are...
He scanned the ground around him, searching for a plausible lie.
Professional reenactors!
The dwarf snorted his distaste.
Listen, boy, we may just be circus folk, but we get around enough to recognize these two fools anywhere.
He waved his hand towards the group. He paused, his fingers moving to stroke at his mustache. A thought occurred to him, and he couldn't fight the grin tugging at his features.
This does explain why we weren't welcome in the last town. They had many guards and seemed quite on edge.
Realizing there was no way to talk their way out of this, Atlas let out a defeated sigh and slumped back down on his heels.
Well, you didn't miss out on much. That town reverend is a complete jackass, and they deserved what they got.
Hearing the mage speak in such a flat and emotionless tone sent a shiver of panic across Eric's spine. He looked up at the massive dwarf as he considered their fate. If there was ever a moment for his brother to rush in and save his hide at the last second, this would be it. There was a long, pregnant pause before the troopmaster let out a bellowing guffaw.
Is that so?
He clapped a hand against his thigh and nodded his emphatic agreement.
I've been wanting to give Father Morgan what to for a decade now.
He marched around the fire and plucked the mage off the ground, setting him on his feet.
My name is Troopmaster Boshill, and you must join us for drinks around the fire.
Regale us with exactly how you insulted the priest.
Basil turned to the king and the prince and helped them to their feet in turn, noting the lingering look of panic in their wide eyes.
Ah, come, come. Prince and pauper alike are welcome among us.
He gestured at the gathering group of circus folk with a wide grin on his face.
You are with friends. We have no love for Lucian Fulgrave here.
Of Bandits and Bad Magic is book 3 of the ongoing series by Leslie Herron. Tune in every few weeks to hear the latest chapter as it's being written. If you'd like to listen to books 1 and 2, you can find links in the description.
What just happened? You, my long-eared friend, just witnessed my greatness.
What? All you did was lie, and poorly for that matter.
I can't hear you over my greatness.
There is something seriously wrong with you.
Yeah, agreed. You're just both jealous. Now, if and you'll excuse me, I have a stone lady to woo.
You have a... How would that even work?
You gotta be kidding. She's gonna chew you up and spit you out.
Unless he's into that kind of thing.
I, for one, have to agree. This is not a wise decision.
Hey, where there's a will, there's a way. Toodles!
Something seriously wrong with you!